Welcome, listeners, to the third season of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and your podcast host. Tune in and join me as I chat with authors writing cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find explicit violence, sex, or gore. You will find intricate plots, engaging characters, and brilliant writing. Thanks for listening. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. Joining me in the corner today is Laura Jensen Walker, author of Murder Most Sweet, the first in a new foodie cozy series, The Bookish Baker Mysteries. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Alexia.
Now, Murder Most Sweet is the first Bookish Baker mystery. So you tell us a bit about what's going on.
Yes. Well, first of all, I created a character. I kind of wanted to see a character like me. I'm a breast cancer survivor, 28 years now, thankfully, yay. But I had a mastectomy years ago, and then 5 years ago, I had to have a second one. And I just thought, you know, and I live my life, and the lack of breasts does not stop me from doing anything, you know. And I thought, you know, I kind of would like to see a character like that. So I created the character of Teddy St. John, and she is also a breast cancer survivor. She's single, whereas I'm married, but she... the same thing I decided for in my life, cancer compelled me to follow my writing dreams, and I decided to have that for Teddy. So she used to work in local government, and the cancer was a wake-up call, and she went, life is short, so she decides that she's going to follow her dream of writing, guess what? Cozy mysteries! And but she also is a fabulous baker. So I set her in the town of Lake Pottawatomie, Wisconsin. I'm originally from, you can still hear that accent, Wisconsin. I still have that nasal accent. I'm originally from Racine, Wisconsin, which is in southeastern Wisconsin. And I created a fictional town called Lake Pottawatomie, about 10 miles away. And part of it is a tribute to my Danish-Norwegian grandma, who was like the best baker on the planet. And I grew up, and after school, my sister and I would go to grandma's house, and she always had baked homemade every day. It was something new: cookies, donuts, pies, cakes. And I just kind of wanted to do a little tribute to that childhood. And also Racine, in case you don't know, and I know you're from Chicago, so you may know this or you may not, but Racine is home to the official Wisconsin's official pastry, state pastry, which is called Kringle. And so Kringle, I grew up with that. And when we moved away when I was 14 to Phoenix, Arizona, I was like, well, where's the Kringle? And I was used to, we could get it all the time and they don't have Kringle. So it's like, what the heck? So I kind of wanted to go back to my little nostalgic nod to that childhood growing up in Wisconsin with the best Danish baked goods on the planet. And so Teddy St. John has written a few cozy mysteries, and she is on her way to, her best friend Char owns a bookstore in town, and she's on her way there because there's going to be a book signing by a famous, best-selling, gorgeous English author who looks a little bit like Colin Firth. So because I am an Anglophile and I love Colin Firth, so I thought, well, let me put in all the things I love in my first mystery novel. So Teddy takes her baked goods. She made a lot of cookies and stuff to the signing. And oh, the other part, I forgot to say, part of the whole breastless point that it's like she decided not to do fake boobs and all that because she's like, what the heck, what does it matter? But you know, some people are uncomfortable with that. They're, you know, like, oh gosh, there's a woman and she doesn't have breasts. So to keep other people from being uncomfortable, she just tends to wear a bunch of scarves. She's a very bohemian kind of a person and has a huge variety of scarves, which I, by the way, I'm sitting in my bedroom as I'm talking to you, and I'm looking at my coat rack of a gazillion scarves because that's what I do too. So she wears these wonderful scarves, but she goes to the signing, everything's great. Afterwards, however, she's walking her dog, and oh my gosh, somebody stole her scarf while she was in the bathroom. She's walking her dog, and the dog starts barking, and the dog is also a tribute to the first dog I ever had, named Gracie, an American Eskimo. She's on the cover, a very cute little white dog. And the dog starts barking, and she sees her scarf on the ground, and as she turns the corner, her scarf is around the neck of the best-selling author's fiancé, strangled with Teddy's scarf. And that starts the mystery.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Now, as you mentioned, Teddy sort of favors the boho chic style, while her mother, Claire, prefers the urban sophisticate look.
Yes.
Now, seeing a stylish modern woman in her 70s is actually a refreshing change, meaning Claire is in her 73, I believe. So what inspired you to go against the stereotype of frumpy, doddering women of a certain age?
Well, I know some women like that. I have, there's a woman in my church, I go to Episcopal Church, and she's actually 91 years old, 91. And she just dresses amazing. And it's like, wow. And there was another woman in her 80s, same thing, the lipstick, the earrings, the everything looked great. And then my own mother, who passed away 7 years ago, she wasn't necessarily into designer stuff, but she was always so put together. She would not, I mean, granted, you know, we're looking back at women at a different time, older than us. They were raised a certain way. You never wear white after Labor Day, blah, blah, blah. But my mom, she was very slim and trim, unlike me, her daughter, who's very fluffy, shall I say. But she, the thing about my mom, she probably weighed 110 pounds, 5'4", very trim, but she would wear jeans, but they had to be completely ironed with a crease. And she always wore nylons under the jeans. Can you even believe that now? It's like, what? What the heck? Mom, you don't need to. Oh, yes. Yes, I must. So she never went bare legged anywhere. But I just kind of thought, you know, I didn't want the standard frumpy thing. I wanted to do something a little different. Plus, I thought it would be a good contrast to Teddy. So that's the thing I'm learning as I write. This is, although it's my first mystery, I wrote 7 chick lit novels back in the day. And so as I write fiction, it's all about, you know, contrast and conflict. And so it's like, yeah, I think that would set up some good conflict with Teddy and her mom, just the way that they're so different.
As you mentioned, this is your first mystery. So what made you to switch from chick lit to cozy mystery?
Well, actually, my last chick lit came out in 2009. At that point, I had written 17 books in 12 years. The first 10 books I wrote were nonfiction humor, and because I'm a former journalist, so the nonfiction is how I started. And then I got into chick lit, and after 17 books in 12 years, I was burned out and I was exhausted. And I had just gotten a brand new full-time job because for a decade I got to stay home and write. And then of course all the money dries up and the royalties go away. And it's like, oh, I need some cash. So I got a job with local government, and trying to write and work full-time, I was just burned out. And so I actually, at that point, this was 11 years ago, I said, I'm never going to write again. I'm burned out. I've said all I want to say, blah, blah, blah. Thankfully, that writing passion, when you're a writer, as you well know, you can't not write. The passion is there. If that's who you are, that's who you are. So about 3 or 4 years ago, that passion came back, and I started working on actually a memoir. But I have this dear friend who had been the editor on several of my nonfiction books, and we've kept in touch. She lives in Michigan. And I said, I want to write fiction again, but I don't want to do chick lit. I just don't know what to write. I have no idea. And she goes, you need to write cozy mysteries. I said, well, and I laughed immediately because I am a seat of the pants writer. I'm not a plotter. And, you know, I read mysteries. I devour mysteries. It's my favorite genre to read. But I'm like, I used to say I could never in a million years write a mystery because it's all about plot. So when she said, you need to write a cozy mystery, and I laughed, and I said, ha, 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 I couldn't write a mystery. I'm really bad at plotting. And she goes, let me get you to reframe that. Why don't you say, you know, I've never thought about that before. I wonder if I could maybe do that. And so she planted that seed, and I just started thinking about it. And she said, Laura, you drink tea. You live in a little cottage. You have a dog. You love flowers. You love gardening. You love England. You are the cozy mystery person, you know, completely. And I went, interesting. And so I went to my local bar. Do you remember the Goldie Bear, Goldie Schultz culinary mysteries? From Diane Mott Davidson.
No, I don't think I remember those.
I think they were maybe 80s and 90s or something. So it's been a while. But so I had, I think maybe her last one came out sometime in the 90s, maybe early 2000 something. But I had loved those. And of course, I've always loved Agatha Christie. And like I said, I've just always loved mysteries. And then I love the Laura Child's Tea Shop Mysteries. I like those a lot. So I just thought, well, what else is out there? And I went to my local Barnes & Noble and I was shocked to see so many, I had no clue, so many cozy mysteries out there. So I bought, I just went, whoa. I mean, there were rows and rows and rows. I just didn't have a clue. So I picked up a few, came home and read them and went, oh, they're very character driven. Yes, of course you have to have a plot surrounding the murder, naturally, but they were so character driven. And that's the kind of fiction that I love to write. And I thought, well, maybe I could try it. And so with great fear and trembling, I sat down and I started working on my first mystery, and it was a blast. I had so much fun. And I talked to my agent and said, hey, I want to write cozy mysteries. And he said, go for it. So I started. And actually, to be honest, Murder Most Sweet was not the first one that I wrote. I wrote another one called Hope, Faith, and a Corpse. And I wrote that first. And that my agent tried to sell that. And initially it didn't sell. So then I started working on Murder Most Sweet. And then as luck and good fortune would have it, I had Hope, Faith, and a Corpse done and Murder Most Sweet. And when he pitched it last fall to Crooked Lane, said, I want both of them. It's like, oh, whoa, okay. I guess I can write a cozy mystery. I mean, I was terrified. I don't know about you as a writer, but every time I approach on something new, I think, oh gosh, I don't know if I can do this. Oh my God, I've never done this. It's like when I first wrote my first book, oh my God, how many years ago? 1997 it came out. So that's a long time. That's 20 some years ago. And it was called Dated Jekyll, Married Hyde. And it's a humor book about, you know, marriage and men and women and the differences. And when I sat down to write it, even though I had my journalism degree and written a gazillion newspaper articles, I went, but I've never written a book. I don't know if I can do it. And I sat down and it happened. And same thing when I wrote my first chick lit. I just, each time I think, I don't know that I can do that. And then it's gotten to the point where my husband goes, honey, you say that every time. And then you sit down and you write it and it happens. So why don't you just stop saying, I don't know if I can do that. And so I said, well, that's a good idea. but I love writing it. And like I said, I was really nervous. I didn't know if I had it in me to write a mystery. And but it turns out I did. So hallelujah.
Well, now that you know that you can write cozy mysteries, yeah. Sometimes a creator of series where the sleuths who are also authors end up writing the books their fictional characters supposedly wrote. I'm thinking of like Murder, She Wrote and Castle. So is there any chance we'll see any of Teddy's mysteries or Tavish's mysteries actually in print?
You know, it's very interesting that you say that, because I did think that crossed my mind. Do you remember that TV show Castle with, yeah. And of course, then they did make books that Castle supposedly wrote. And I went, what the heck? That's just, you know, so fascinating. And as I was writing Teddy, I mentioned that her first novel was called Death by Danish. And I in the back of my mind, I thought, wouldn't that be funny if they ever, if these books become successful, knock on wood, that they say, hey, why don't you do some of Teddy's? But so, you know, that thought has crossed my mind. I haven't made any plans to do that. But it's at the back of my mind. I think that would be kind of funny. That'd be kind of interesting. And then in Teddy's main character, I have her have the Kate and Callie mysteries. And Kate and her, she runs a bed and breakfast, and her dog is Callie. And the two of them, her canine helps her solve mysteries. So that was just a very casual thought that I had. And it's there. And maybe, although Tavish, though, who does appear and will continue to appear, yay. He writes suspense, and I wouldn't have a clue how to write suspense. Oh, wait a minute. I just said that about everything. I don't know. The suspense seems like I can't even fathom writing suspense. That would be just way beyond the pale for me. I can't imagine, but you know, wouldn't that be hilarious in 5 years? We're talking and you go, hey, Laura, you got your first suspense novel out here. I would be shocked.
Now, Teddy is not only an author, she's also a baker. But yes. in your dedication and acknowledgments, you described your husband as the baker in the family.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm sorry, I have to acknowledge that I know people think if you write culinary mysteries, then you, of course, are a baker or cook or whatever. And I'm honestly going to say this. I can bake chocolate chip cookies, and I think I've done oatmeal raisin once or twice. And I can do some English scones, but that's kind of the extent of my baking abilities. My husband is, I call him my Renaissance man, and he is just the best cook on the planet and the best baker. And so when I started working on Murder Most Sweet and knew that, okay, she's a baker, we got to have recipes, blah, blah, blah. We just started, I said, well, honey, we talked about it and kind of brainstorm ideas of things she could make. And I said, and I wanted some of it to go back to my Wisconsin childhood and things my grandma did or whatever. So I had a couple of my grandma's recipes that I included. But basically, Michael went in the kitchen and he just started baking away. And so the majority of the recipes are from, and it's kind of cute because we decided to call it the Cozy Corner Bakery in our house. So from the Cozy Corner Bakery came all of these wonderful treats. And then what we did is we had to test the recipes on friends. So that was quite fun. But definitely my husband is the baker, not me. He's much better at that than I am. I can do so in a pinch. But, you know, if you've got somebody in your life that's so much better at something, why waste your time doing for the first, I'd say, decade of our marriage, because he is a good cook. I used to want to, and we'd have friends over, we like to entertain, although we haven't done that in 6 months now, but I used to feel like I needed to prove myself, you know, that, well, of course, I can cook, and I would try and cook, and it would be okay. I had a few recipes, but Michael was so much better at it than I am, and I finally said, you know, I think the worst, it was 2 years ago, for a friend's birthday, I went, I want to cook the meal for the birthday, and I remember I had this recipe years ago for Cornish game hens, which, God, I love Cornish game hens. I'm going to do that on a bed of wild rice. Well, I couldn't find the recipe. So I had to go online and I, you know, found a different one and I made this. Now this just goes to show you, this is the last time I cooked for friends. So we had 8 friends over. I did Cornish game hens. And when they came out of the oven, I thought, what the heck is that little dark gray kind of black stuff coming out of it at the bottom of the, and I didn't realize or totally forgot you're supposed to take the innards out.
Oh.
So I baked those Cornish game hens without removing the innards. And so that was really nice. And so there was everybody at the birthday dinner. And as we served it, my one friend, we started talking about people who cook and people who don't. And my one girlfriend said, oh, I had this friend who she made a turkey for Thanksgiving dinner and she didn't take out the innards. Can you believe it? I went, well, yes, I actually can. I said, but I took these out just now and just scraped that off to the side. So it was like, that's it. That's it. I am not a cook. I leave that to my husband, but I'm the world's best house cleaner. I know that's not very exciting. So when people come over, I go, see, he'll always comment on the food. And I go, but look at how that your floors are gleaming. And that furniture is so well polished. And it's so decorated. So my strengths are cleaning and decorating and writing. Michael is baking, cooking, sewing, upholstering, making quilts. He is definitely my Renaissance man. Thank God, because I can't do that stuff.
But it sounds like your skills complement each other's.
They do. They do. They do.
And speaking of baking, I did look at some. I'm also not a baker, so I have to admit that I'm not going to make any of your husband's recipes because they won't work.
Okay.
But they did sound delicious, as does a lot of the descriptions of food that you have. This being a foodie cozy, you know, food does play a central role.
Yeah.
I personally don't know much about Scandinavian cuisine, though. And it's important to the story that this is Norwegian and Danish food.
Can right.
you talk a little bit about the regional cuisine, the Scandinavian and the Wisconsin, and also tell
sure.
us exactly is a Kringle?
Okay, sure. So with the Scandinavian cuisine, now I did not, as far as the actual cooked meals, I didn't do Scandinavian because what I remember from my childhood, because my mom was not Scandinavian, but my dad was, but my grandma. So at Christmas time, one of the things they do is they have, oh my gosh,
I'm 63 years old and my brain, do you ever have that happen where you're going to say something and it just goes right out of your head? Well, that's just what happened. it was some fish dish. I can't remember the name of it now. But it was, to be honest, to me, it was just gross. But it was a tradition at Christmas that you had this. And my dad was just, we go to grandma's and had this. So I thought, I don't want to put a gross fish dish in my book, you know. However, the wonderful things my grandma made, Futterman Buckles is what, and it's spelled Fattigman. And then buckle, or it's like buckle, Bakkels. And what that means, Futterman means poor man. And so traditionally they're made at Christmas, and they're basically, it's, you make these cookies and they're deep. You have to put them in a deep fryer, and then they're very airy light. You put them in the deep fryer, and then you have to, they're like a diamond shaped cookie, and you put a little slit, and then you put the dough through the slit, and they make it almost kind of almost like a twist or a pretzel type look. You fry it in the deep fryer, and then when they come out, you roll it in powdered sugar. And when you bite into this, it is the most airy, amazing cookie. And it tastes just a little tiny bit like the inside of a donut, but very, very light. And so I had to, thankfully I have my grandma's recipe. So that is included. And, then the other thing of growing up in Racine, Danish layer cake is, again, you know, when you grow up and you think, well, everything is like where I grew up, isn't it? So I was there 14 years, and every single family birthday or wedding that we went to served Danish layer cake. Danish layer cake is, again, it's very much a Racine. I don't know that even all of Wisconsin has it. I think it's more just southern where the Danes live. And it's just this multiple layer cake. It's a very moist yellow cake, and it's seven layers often. And it's got ribbons of raspberry filling, and then custard, and then buttercream. Mm-hmm. And the we would always get it from the bakeries because they were so incredible. You just go right down the street to the bakery and get one. And some of the people in the family like the buttercream icing. That would be me raising my hand. I just have a sweet tooth and I love buttercream, and they always put those buttercream roses on the top. Oh my God. So every time there was a wedding or a birthday and some of the adults go, it's too sweet, and they'd stick their roses to the side. Can I have your roses? But other people, my husband included, when he went to Racine with me the first time, he likes the whipped cream frosting because it's not as sweet. So you can do one or the other. We did include a recipe for Danish layer cake. I had never made it in my life. My aunt, my grandma is long gone, but my aunt, who's still in Wisconsin and is 78, she's never made it in her life. She said, I think mom made it years ago, but it was just easier to go to the bakery. And I went, well, we're going to try and make this. So we went online and looked at several different recipes and several different, and I just kept, some of, you know, when you go online, it's like, well, they don't have the, because the custard had like an almond sort of flavor. That's a big thing among Danes, is almond flavoring. And so I went, well, none of these have that. And then other things. And so Michael created with much trial and error. I think he made it three times. It's like, okay, that's not going to work. So a lot of trial and error to make custard, which was very difficult, and putting it in the oven and all this kind of a thing. So there's cake, and then there's a raspberry filling. And then, but we also do at the end, for those of those readers, including me, who are not real bakers and stuff, it's like, you know what you can do? You can use raspberry jam, and you can just do that. You can put in raspberry preserves. And there's a thing that I found from when I lived in England called bird's custard. And that's just a very easy, it's a mix. So you don't have to make the custard from scratch. So I tried it because, you know, not everybody has the time or energy to make, it's a very long process to make this cake. So it's like, okay, well, here's a couple cheats that work, and they actually taste pretty, almost as good, very close. So, but yeah, as far as some of the foods though, what I did is I stole from my husband, like I talked about chicken marsala, which is one of my favorite meals, and Michael makes the best chicken marsala I've ever had. So I put that in there, and I may not be a good cook or a good baker, but I sure love to eat. I enjoy my food. I go, you know, I just, it's like, wow. So I just want, so that was very fun to write about and to describe. And part of that,
I will say again, a nod to Diane Mott Davidson many years ago when I wrote her. I loved her books. And she was a caterer in a small town in Colorado. And I just loved, I would read this and I would read her description of food and how she, and I, my mouth would be watering. And I swore that I was going to make one of her recipes. And, you know, I think I read 20 of her books. I never once made one of those recipes. But it sure made me hungry and it sure got me going. And I loved it as I read it. So I kind of had that in my mind as I was reading. Remember how she made you so hungry as you were reading her book? So I wanted to try and do that same thing for my readers.
And what is a kringle?
Oh, a kringle. Okay. Oh my gosh. So a kringle, it's actually, when you look at it, it's a flat pastry, Danish pastry. It's in an oval shape. But what it is it takes 3 days to make a kringle because there are between 32 and 48 layers of pastry. So you know how, what's the baklava? You know how baklava has all those flaky layers and stuff? Mm-hmm. A kringle is like that, but they're, so it's a folding process. And again, I have not done this. I think my grandma did it when I was little, but all the bakeries in Racine have it. And you can order from those bakeries. But there's always a fruit filling. So when I was little, the ones I remember the most, because I'm, you know, my 60s now. So as a little girl, you know, 50 some years ago, the ones that were the most popular were apple, cherry, pecan, where those were like the three top ones. And then at bridal showers, they would have one called Napoleon kringle because that had custard in it. And so there is a fruit filling or a nut filling into this, inside this pastry, which is 32 or 48 flaky layers of this pastry that has been baked, and it's baked in an oval ring. And then the top has got just a little bit of an icing, that very thin white icing on the top of it. And it is like the best thing on the planet. I'm not kidding. And when you take it home from the bakery, you have it. We would have it for breakfast. We grew up having this for breakfast, not every breakfast, but as a treat, like on the weekends. You cut a piece of kringle, you warm it up a little bit. We didn't have microwaves back then, and then you put a tiny touch of butter on it. So that's the most sinfully decadent thing ever. You know, pastry, fruit, frosting, butter, and a nice cup of tea or coffee. Amazing. And the Danes, of course, love their coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker. I'm a tea drinker. But kringle and coffee is like the best thing ever. And the wonderful thing, I live in California now. About 5 years ago, I shop at Trader Joe's. I love Trader Joe's. We're in Trader Joe's. I'm looking and I almost actually screamed. And I said, oh, Michael, they have kringle. Oh my God, they have kringle. Because it comes in it's a very distinctive wax paper packaging and it's flat. And it's just this big rectangle of flatness. And it came from, and I looked and I went, duck, it's Racine. And I told the grocery store clerk, I went, that's my hometown. That's the bakery we used to go to. That's my kringle, you know? And they're like, whoa. And they sold out like immediately. And they introduced it like at Christmas and then they would do it at Easter. They were just doing it at holidays, mm-hmm. But it has proven to be so popular that they don't always carry it, but let's see, a few weeks ago, I was doing some other interview or something and a blog, and I talked about kringle there a little bit. And by the time I was in, I was so hungry for kringle. I went, oh, I hope Trader's has some. And I went to Trader's and they did. They had kringle. And I was like, oh, good. I'm going to have one right now. So people can get them from Trader Joe's occasionally. But what I say is, you know, O&H Bakery now, and they're the ones who provide Trader Joe's with kringle. They, you can go online to their website and just O&H Bakery, and they will ship it anywhere in the U.S. And within 2 days, you can have a kringle. And I'm telling you, once you have kringle, you'll just never be the same. Am I making you hungry?
Yeah. So now that you've made everyone quite hungry for actually not just Kringle, but for all of Wisconsin's cuisine, you've made us all want to go to Wisconsin now. And the state seems to be very much a character in the book, as much of a character as the people. So how would you describe Wisconsin?
Well, again, that's what I knew the first 14 years of my life. And Racine actually is a factory town. Johnson's Wax, it's the home of Johnson's Wax, which did you know that?
I did not know that.
See? So I grew up thinking, again, it's like Johnson's Wax. So half my family, most of my family were blue collar people. My dad was not, he was an artist, never quite fit in. but that's where I kind of got my, who I am from is my dad. But everybody in my family in Racine, so they had Johnson's Wax Factory, which make all of your floor care and other products. They also had Western Printing, and Western Printing printed books from Whitman Publishing, and they printed Trixie Belden Mysteries. Do you know Trixie Belden?
I do. I didn't realize she was printed in Wisconsin, though.
Yes, and so because my aunt worked at Western Printing, she would bring me home the latest Trixie hot off the press. So in fourth grade, I would get Trixie right away. So growing up in Racine, and also Racine is famous for Frank Lloyd Wright, a few of his buildings. In fact, he did the Johnson's Wax building, and there's a it's called the Golden Ron. There's a thing called the Golden Rondelle, where they would show this. It was a theater in the round kind of a thing. So Racine, although a factory town, there was a lot of fresh, farm stands and red barns in the, right outside of town and everything. So, to me, it was a small town, but I think it might be about 80,000 people now. So you don't think of that as, it just depends on where you're from. That's not small town, like, of just a few thousand. But to me, growing up, and we had just the downtown theater. And then, of course, we finally got like a little mall with a different theater and that. So I just, everything, but Racine was very much focused on, there was a part of town called West Racine. And that's where there were at least, I'd say, seven bakeries in West Racine, and a local soda fountain and a Woolworths drug. So it had a lot of that small town feel. And so that's what I, even though Lake Pottawatomie is much, much smaller than Racine, I wanted to try and replicate that. Racine itself, Wisconsin itself is beautiful. It's northern Wisconsin. Again, when growing up, because my dad was an artist, hard to make a living as an artist. He did obviously different jobs, and my mom was a waitress. I had three brothers and sisters, so we were kind of poor growing up and didn't have a lot of money for vacations. In fact, our favorite thing on Sundays was we would go to the Milwaukee airport, and just, my dad would say, look, and we would park and we'd stand at the fence and we'd watch all the planes take off and go, someday we can get on a plane and someday, and they're going to all these amazing places. But again, as a kid, or a drive in the country. So we did things that didn't cost money because we didn't have money. And so the big deal was going to the Milwaukee airport and watching the planes take off. But also as a little girl, Chicago is just 60 miles south of Racine. And so the first time I went to Chicago was in the fifth grade and a field trip to the Museum of Science and Industry. And so we did that, I remember. And then I think that was earlier, I'm trying to remember the year, I think 63, when the Sound of Music came out, that was such a big deal. So my dad and mom, especially my dad, were big musical theater lovers. They love musicals, Rodgers and Hammerstein. So when Sound of Music came out, my dad said, this is a big deal. So we went, he took us to Chicago, which, that's a 60-mile drive from Racine. And we saw it in one of those old movie palaces because it was so important to see the Sound of Music on a great screen in a beautiful theater. So, so there's lots of small towns in Wisconsin. Northern Wisconsin is very beautiful. I don't believe that and there's a place called Wisconsin Dells, which is like an amusement park area. And always growing up, we heard about the Dells, but we never went. It was just not in our budget. So, but a few years ago, back in the day when I was writing nonfiction, I was also a speaker. I wrote a book about breast cancer called Thanks for the Mammogram. And I used to go around and speak at events at hospitals and, civic organizations and like the Susan G. Komen Foundation fundraisers and stuff. And so one of the events I got to speak at was in La Crosse, Wisconsin, way up north. And that was really my first time, and I'm in my 50s then, finally, when that happened, that I finally got to see the northern Wisconsin, which is absolutely stunningly beautiful. So the landscape, the trees, it's just gorgeous. So I hope to see more of northern Wisconsin one of these days. But I, even though I grew up in southern Wisconsin, I never made it to the north part of the state till I was in my 50s.
Now, you mentioned that you live in Northern California now, right?
Yes.
which is very different from, I'm assuming, both northern and southern Wisconsin.
Yes.
And your other series, the Hope, Faith, and a Corpse series, is set in Northern California. So yes. How do you juggle writing series that are in such different places with such different characters? Because your sleuth in the California series is an Episcopal priest, right?
Right, a woman Episcopal priest. And I did that because I go to Episcopal church, and I just started going to one like 7 years ago, and we walked in and there was a woman priest. It's like, whoa, because I had prior an evangelical background, and that was the whole women aren't allowed to preach kind of thing in the environment I had been in. So to see a woman priest was like, this is great. And I love that. And she was amazing. So I thought, oh, I kind of like that as an idea for a character. But I love Northern California. And we have some favorite towns that we go to. We have a town a bit northeast of us, and it's called Sutter Creek, and there's a favorite bed and breakfast we like to go to. And they used to have a beautiful outdoor place called Daffodil Hill. I love flowers. I am a huge flower geek. And because I lived in England many years ago, daffodils are one of my favorite flowers. Well, Daffodil Hill was this lovely place we would go to every spring when the daffodils were in bloom. And it was a family-owned property, like a ranch. And the first, 140 years ago, the first settlers in that area, they planted a few daffodils, then they planted more, and then they just kept planting. And it became this massive thing, thousands and thousands and thousands of daffodils on this hill. So it's absolutely gorgeous. And it's just, the rolling hills, it's beautiful. The one thing that is, even though I love Northern California, the one thing that makes me sad is, of course, with our heat, and we have the green rolling hills, after about March or April, forget it, then it's the golden hills because the sun, that the green does not last. And I lived in England. I was stationed there with the Air Force a century ago. And that's where I fell in love with the green rolling hills. So it does make me sad. It's pretty. The gold hills of California are pretty, but I like the green better. But as far back to your question of how I kept things straight, I was juggling. And let me tell you, I'll be honest and say, because I'm a pantser and not a plotter, I would be working on one book and I'd start to, and I go, wait, wrong character. It's over here. So finally what I had, and I did that a few times and I'd think, well, wait, isn't so-and-so? Oh no, that's the other one. So finally I thought, I better make at least a cheat sheet. So I did make a cheat sheet for each book. Okay, here's my list of characters and here's a little thing about each of them so I don't get confused, and tried to do that. And the other thing with me, because I am a seat of the pants writer and I am a fast writer to start, that's thanks to journalism. You had to write fast on deadline because the paper's got to get out. So I'll write my first draft on, and as I'm writing my first draft, I'm not putting a lot of details in about setting or secondary characters or whatever. I'm just trying to get the story out because I don't know what the story's going to be and it has to unfold and I've got to learn the story. So what I do when I'm done is then I go back and then I go in and I think, I really need to beef up the details here. And I mean, Katrina McPherson is a friend and I know she's a friend of yours too. And you've had her on and I love Katrina's books, especially her standalone. They're so atmospheric in her setting always. It's just like, wow. And I don't write. It's when I say atmospheric, I'm thinking more, she's got the Scottish, the darker, whatever, and kind of foreboding sort of thing. And I'm writing light and fluffy, cozy mystery. So I don't have that type, but I have a sweet small town with, and I always make sure it's like, put in the flowers, describe a scene of the flowers and describe this and describe that. But I do that later because I have to get the story down so I know what the heck's happening.
Well, now that you've discovered that you can write mysteries and not only discovered that you can write cozies, you've managed to write two different cozy series. Do you think you'll ever go back to chick lit or? Is it
oh God, no, no. Sorry. Did I say that very adamantly? No, I'll tell you the truth with chick lit. When I did my first one, because I am much more a boho chic woman like Teddy, I'm not into designer stuff, and chick lit, at least back then when I started, it was, you had to, I had to go online and go, what designer is this? And I had to ask friends. It's like, that was part of it. That was, it's like, you know, it was kind of like Bridget Jones' Diary was the first, and we kind of copied and went, okay, so you got to have a single woman. She's got to be into fashion. And it's just, I found that exhausting, and it's not who I am. So no, I don't plan to ever do chick lit again. It was fun. I'm glad I got my feet. The great thing for me, the thing that's to me universal between chick lit and cozies is the humor. And that is, for whatever reason, and again, when I wrote my first book in 1997, Data Jekyll Married Hyde, I didn't plan to write humor. It just kind of happened. I sat down and it just kind of flowed out, and I went, oh. And so when I wrote my first chicklet, actually, I was at a writing conference, and the first line, "My thighs were at it again," came to me, you know, and it's like, oh. And so it was, so for chicklet to have a funny first person kind of snarky voice, that came very naturally to me. So that was good at the time, but all the design stuff and all the clothing and all the, that just wasn't me. And I'm just more of a cozy girl. That's who I am. So I hope to write cozies for at least the next decade or more. I hope, you know, that's what I'd like to do.
Well, you've got 2 series underway, so that sounds like a good start.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
And as you mentioned, you put a lot of yourself into the story. And you've got the baking, obviously the mystery author, your dog, the Episcopal priest. So what other elements of you, Laura, are you going to weave into your books? Like the tea drinking, or?
Yes. Yes.
The Episcopal church, since it's an outgrowth of the Anglican church.
Yes. Well, actually, in Hope, Faith, and a Corpse, so what I did in Murder Most Sweet, I made Teddy a coffee drinker, because the more traditional Racine Danish thing is coffee and Kringle and coffee. And I actually hate coffee. Like, I hate it more than anything. I hate the smell. I hate the taste. So writing about coffee was like, I had to keep asking my husband, now, is this what I would say? Can I just say, I tried not to get into too many details about coffee, because I was not about to drink it. But in Murder Most Sweet, I was able to let that tea drinking side of me, because I said I was stationed in England with the Air Force years ago, and that's where I became a rabid Anglophile and fell in love with English tea. And I love a proper English tea and a good, it's called builder's tea, which means a nice strong tea. And my favorite is called PG Tips. So I made Pastor Hope of Hope, Faith, and a Corpse, somebody who loves PG Tips tea, and I wove that in. But also, Pastor Hope is an old movie buff. I am the biggest old movie buff on the planet. When I was a little girl, my dad, the one who loved musicals, just loved old movies, and we would stay up late, and, you know, way before we had all these different, you know, streaming and channels that we have, and there were only, what, 3 or 4 stations back in the day, there would be the late show, the late movie that started at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and he would let me stay up on the weekends and watch it with him, and it was always old movies, and he'd tell me little tidbits about the stars, you know, and, oh, Alan Ladd was so short he had to stand on a box to kiss his leading lady, and Betty Grable had her legs insured for $1 million, blah, blah, blah. So I fell, my old movie love started when I was a kid, and I decided to bring that in for Pastor Hope. And even though she's a good 20 years younger than me, I wanted that to be part of who she is, that she loved old movies. And I have her be the widow of a man who was, 15 years older than her, so that part wove in. And then at the back, if Pastor Hope's, I had her movie guide. What are the best old movies, and did that and talked about them. So I weaved that in a lot, which was very fun, because that's, you know, huge for me. I even wove in, I play Silver, you know, Trivial Pursuit, the game, right?
Yes.
Okay. There's an edition called Silver Screen Trivial Pursuit. And in our lives, and once a year on my birthday, because I can be a little obnoxious when we play games, I really like to win, very competitive. So we have an agreement, once a year on my birthday, we can play Silver Screen Trivial Pursuit, and we have a group of friends come over, and they go, okay, we'll play Silver Screen, because generally I beat everybody. So, you know, that's my, but it's, you know, I don't want to be too obnoxious. So it's just like, we'll just do it once a year. But So I just wove some of those bits into Hope. And then again, with Faith, just, you know, the bakery thing about my loving my childhood of baked goods and Racine and Danish things like that. But yeah, I have learned that I'm going to have to start keeping notes as, in addition to character charts, though, so I don't forget. Oh, yeah, that's right. Blah, blah, blah. And sometimes I forget, like there might be a possible romantic interest. And sometimes I go, oh, wait, is that the right one? Or is that, so I've got to get that down pat more. But it's so much fun writing cozy mysteries. I just had a blast. And I would go and tell my husband, guess what Teddy did today? Because each day was a surprise. And I love that. So are you a pantser or are you a plotter?
I'm a plantser. I do like a basic outline that I usually end up not following, but I at least have to plot out who got murdered, why they got murdered, how they got murdered, and who did it before I can write the rest of it.
Okay. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just saying I'm somewhere in between a pantser and a plotter.
Yeah. Well, when I say I'm not a plotter, the one thing that I do, although it did change, I mean, years ago when I went to this writing conference and I was, you know, hoping to start writing fiction, but again, that terror, I don't know if I could write fiction. I don't even know how to begin. And I went to this class taught by an author named Davis Bunn. And he said, before you even begin to write, you have to know how you're going to end. And I went, oh, okay. And now not everybody agrees with that. But that helped me because I didn't know, how do you start? How do you start a book? And so I do, when I start, I think, okay, I need to know my ending or at least have a general idea. As I write, of course, that could change. And in one of my books, and I'm not going to say which one, in one of my books, I did have I had planned a certain person to be the murderer. And as I wrote and as I continued and I got to the end, it realized, oh, that's not going to work. That's not good enough. That's too easy. So then I changed it. But so I do try to have the end goal in sight that, okay, this person, you know, this is how it's going to start. We're going to have blah, 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 the main character happen upon this body. And this is who the murderer is going to be. But then in between, and why, but then in between it can change. So, I mean, I have to start out thinking I have an idea of the ending, but knowing that, you know, that's up for change.
So you've got your Wisconsin Twinny Mystery, Murder Most Sweet coming out. You've got your Hope, Faith, and a Corpse, Northern California Episcopal Mystery coming out in, I believe, January 2021. So
yep.
What's next for Teddy and also for Pastor Hope?
Well, I signed a 3-book deal with Crooked Lane. So I'm doing edits on Deadly Delights, which is the second bookish baker mystery. And then that will come out next June. I'm not contracted for anything else at this point, but I did recently send some ideas, a couple ideas for the next 2 books for Hope and the next 2 books in Murder Most Sweet. And, you know, whether or not I get a contract, that's not up to me. So hopefully, but definitely in Teddy we'll see more interesting things happening with her. Although in book 2, Tavish is not as prevalent as he is in book 1 because he had to go back to England for a while, but that I don't want to say too much more about that, but Deadly Delights, I am finishing those edits. Oh, I also do, interestingly enough, I have a nonfiction book coming out the week after Teddy. And it's my cancer book that I wrote 20 years ago, thanks for the mammogram. And my publisher asked me, they said, we would love to bring that out again for Breast Cancer Awareness Month this year. So could you revise and update that? So I did that. And it just turned out, so Murder Most Sweet comes out on 9/8, September 8th. And then Thanks for the Mammogram comes out on September 15th. So it's like, 2 books a week apart. That's going to be a little mind-blowing. But, you know, yeah. So, but yeah, I'm hoping to continue. I really want to continue Teddy and Hope for at least 3 more books. But again, that's up to the publisher, not me. So fingers crossed.
Yes, fingers crossed. Readers, go buy her books. So we can have more of them.
Yes, you know, I hope so.
Where can readers buy your books?
They can get them online at, you know, most of the online retailers. There's IndieBound. I'm having a book launch on September 8th, a virtual book launch with my local bookstore. And that's called Capital Books. and it's in Sacramento. But on my Facebook page, so it's Laura Jensen Walker's Facebook, there's links that you can sign up for my virtual, and you can buy the book through that independent bookstore or Barnes & Noble, Amazon, IndieBound, Books A Million. So those are all available.
And what besides Facebook can readers connect with you?
I'm on Twitter, and it's Laura Jensen Wall, W-A-L-1, because Walker was too long to fit for a Twitter handle, apparently. So Laura Jensen Wall 1, at Laura Jensen Wall 1 on Twitter. And then Instagram, it's Laura Jensen Walker. And then there's my website, which is laurajensenwalker.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Laura, for joining me today in the Cozy Corner.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
It has been, and now I am actually starving, so I'm going to eat because I've got Kringle on the brain right now.
You really need to order some. Go online. Tell me, if you don't have a Trader Joe's near you, seriously, if you get craving, go online to O&H Bakery and check out getting a Kringle, because they're, I'm telling you, it's the most amazing thing you'll ever eat.
Yeah, I will put their URL on the description notes, because I'm sure everyone will hear this and they will be getting a lot of this. We're all going to want Kringle now.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you, Alexia. This has been so much fun.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to our chat. This has been the Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm your host, Alexia Gordon. Until next time, listeners, goodbye.
Thanks, listeners, for joining me for another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review wherever you listened. Follow the podcast on social media. I'm on Facebook as The Cozy Corner Podcast and Twitter and Instagram as podcast_cozy. Now you can support me on Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month and get a shout out on an episode of The Cozy Corner. Support at higher levels gains access to patron-only posts, thank you gifts, and giveaways. Sign up at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Thank you for your support, and thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.